Welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. Sit back and enjoy the show hosted by Marcin Lewandowski.
Hey EU Startups, if you're running a startup like me, you have more than enough on your plate. So when a prospect asks if your company is ISO 27001 or SOC 2 compliant, you're probably thinking, how the heck are we going to do this? We don't have the time, we don't have the manpower, and we definitely don't have the know-how. That's where Sitel comes in. With our automated platform and in-house expert to manage the entire process for you, you'll get compliant super fast. Compliance has never been easier.
So if you need help with compliance, visit sitale.ai/EU startups. That's sitale.ai/EU startups for $1,000 off your first framework. Hey everyone, this is Marcin Lewandowski and you're listening to the EU Startups Podcast. My guest today is Anna Alex, co-founder of companies such as Nala Earth, Planetly, Outfittery, and Spiegel best-selling author. Anna, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Anna, so let's dive right into it. You've built businesses in fashion, carbon, and now biodiversity. If we strip everything down, what's the common thread that truly defines your work?
Oof, okay, that's a big question. So first of all, maybe let's start with that. I mean, biodiversity is it's not a good term. I started not to like it that much anymore because people easily misunderstand it. Some are saying like, what does it has to do with diversity, like gender diversity and so on. So let's just take nature as a term. I think everyone can relate to this and it's a way easier term.
Sounds good.
Okay. And so the common thread in my businesses, to be honest, I mean, I've never been a fan of red lines in the CVs. Never believed in that. Never looked for that, to be honest. For me, CVs, lives, and it's more of a journey. And hopefully you develop throughout this journey. And for me, the development was very much that I came into the startup scene super, super early. It was 2008 when I worked for the first startup. Startup wasn't a thing back then. It was very, people were like, what are you doing there? It sounds weird, right? You're getting millions from some investors, building businesses, internet, everything was new. So it was fantastic times, like completely new land for building everything. And then I started my first company, Outfittery. And during this time, I fell in love with entrepreneurship, with understanding that I can build a business myself. I can think of an idea and then create a company and then people will come there and work for me just because I had this idea. Wow. I mean, this is crazy when you think about
it. It's magic.
It's magic. So I very much fell in love with the tool set of being an entrepreneur, tool set of entrepreneurship. Well, then in my third company was Planetly and now with Nala, I started applying this to something that's really close to my heart and that I really care about, which is climate, nature, animals. And so for me, I'd say there's not this one thread, but this is the journey that I made.
No, makes total sense. I love it, Anna. Thanks for sharing. It kind of feels like you could have picked any challenge to tackle next after Planetly. But you chose nature with Nala Earth. What was like kind of the moment that made you say, okay, this is it. This is what I have to do.
Yeah. So actually, as a very personal moment, I can trace this back many, many years when I was on a hike with my husband at Mallorca. And I remember us talking about like the priorities in this world and what we want to do with our lives and so on. There was all pre-kids and all of this. And then I remember us agreeing that I will take care of the planet and the animals Well, he will take care of the humans.
Nice. That's a nice agreement. I like it.
And I felt like, yeah, this is what I care about. Animals has always been so close to my heart. Nature, sometimes in my head when doing all of this, right? And I mean, currently the macro is crazy, politics going crazy. Every one of us knows that and experiencing this. And sometimes in all this chaos, I'm trying to zoom out and see this planet and understand this feeling, how wonderful and so incredibly rare and it is that we exist, that we have this planet, that we have an atmosphere that is keeping us from all these astro storms, and like it is so incredible, and I just want to protect this. And I feel oftentimes we're so like deep down in caring about things that do not really exist. Like money doesn't really exist. We made it up as humans.
It's a concept.
Companies, the same. It's a concept, yeah? But nature, that is real. Yeah, and that's why I care about it so much.
Yeah, I can totally relate to this. Even more, I don't know if you had the same kind of realization, but you said you had it already pre-children. I think... After having my daughter, and after she was born, I more than ever before kind of wanted to focus on, you know, helping founders or entrepreneurs build a better, happier, and more sustainable future that she would be excited about living in.
And we have it all, right? That's the crazy thing. We could have it all. We could feed the whole planet on a vegetarian or vegan diet. We could still preserve big parts for nature so nature can thrive, can bounce back. It's all there.
Yeah, exactly. So Anna, you know, companies now kind of finally understand carbon footprints. And I know that you told me to kind of avoid biodiversity as a term, but I think exactly, this biodiversity is still like seen as a bit too complicated. What's the single like biggest misconception that's stopping businesses from taking action?
So the biggest misconception is that we do believe that our natural resources are endless. And that nature will just keep on providing, will keep on providing groundwater, will keep on cleaning our water that we're polluting, will keep on cleaning the air, will keep on having enough insects to pollinate the trees for the fruits and the vegetables we're eating, and so on and so forth. So we do believe nature will just keep giving, like a mother. Mother Nature keeps giving until she's dead. And she will. Yeah, she will, but we reached a point where this is not possible anymore, and where this is not possible if we, it might be possible for the next year or for the next 2 years to keep, depending very much on the local ecosystem. But the Amazonas, for example, so the Amazon forest is, there's a tipping point, and the tipping point is estimated to be at 20%. So it becomes carbon negative. So it releases more carbon than it absorbs, and it's the lung of the world. And we're now at 18% deforestation, and at 20, it will tip. This is irreversible. So this is just one example where this is not a behavior that we can keep on going. So the planetary boundaries of biodiversity for nature are even worse than the ones for climate. And when I understood this, probably many people are aware by now of the concept of the planetary boundaries, which is, just as to summarize it, it's from Johan Rockström, one of the best scientists, I'd say, in the world. And he's looking on which are the conditions that need to be fulfilled in order to have a safe life as humans on this planet. And then he's looking at different boundaries, and there are just some boundaries of the planet that we shouldn't go over. But we did, and the biodiversity one is already red. That means we lost so many ecosystems. We lost so many animals. We lost so much of these ecosystems already. And this is just in the past 50 years. So around 80% of all biomass we already lost in the past 50 years. Mm. And this is insane.
This is insane. This is truly insane. Anna, if a company CEO tells you, so Anna, biodiversity sounds nice, but it's not my priority right now. What's your, you already like, I think said enough just a second ago, but what's your like one-liner response? What like how to change your mind?
So my one-liner response is nature is the most important supplier for almost every business. Mm. 50% of the global GDP is directly depending on intact nature. Mm. This is true for all producing companies, for all pharma, for all food and beverage, for sure, but for all automotive as well, energy companies, and so on and so forth. I could go on forever. Mm-hmm. So how could you ever think that you're independent of nature? This is a huge business risk if you're not tackling it actively and looking at it proactively as you are looking at other risks.
Yeah. And so you're kind of essentially creating a new playbook for businesses, you know, to measure nature impact. Maybe like going a bit back, what's one lesson from Planetly that you've applied to Nala Earth? And maybe one thing you're deliberately doing differently this time. Mm.
So we're trying not to create a new playbook, to be honest, right? So we're very much based on science and rather trying to translate the science into the business world.
So maybe the playbook that didn't exist before.
So, and I think this is very much where we are. So what we could do with software was big data. By now, we're using a lot of data. We're using satellite data. We're using AI to apply it, to understand. We're using academic data. Mm-hmm. And all of this we can translate into a business relevance for businesses. Yeah. We can translate into the language of businesses. We can translate into money, which is ultimately the language of businesses, into risks. And this is the important part. We're working very, very closely with many sustainability departments of huge corporates, for example, working with Volkswagen, with BASF, with Continental. So with really the very big ones of this planet. Mm-hmm. Because they already understood if I'm not tracking this actively and understanding my risk exposure that I do have to declining groundwater levels, to declining ecosystems, to declining pollination, and so on and so forth, I really have a big problem here. So we're doing this. We're working with the sustainability departments, and we're working as well with the finance departments. Yeah. And this is the point that I wanted to make, because it's not just this one thing that all these sustainability guys are doing there. It's a very, very concrete financial risk. And this is where we need to, where we will change our thinking in the next few years, my assumption. Yeah.
And I know that you scale Planetly incredibly fast. With Nala Earth, are you playing the game differently, or is it full speed ahead again?
So I think there's always a certain product zeitgeist fit and certain product zeitgeist pace as well. With Planetly, this was exceptional. We grew to over 250 people in just 2 years, right? So adding dozens of people to the team every month and all of this during COVID and so on. It was an exceptional ride. And a friend of mine put it like this. He said, like, actually, you have been in a flow for 2 years. And I think he was right. So, with Nala now, we're doing it differently. We need to come up with a new toolbox. Nature is very complex. And we need to still like break it down to what is really essential for businesses. So we're doing it differently with Nala now. We want to stay as small as possible, as long as possible. We're still raising venture capital. We just did a round with Iris VC from Paris. I'm very proud of this. And yeah, we're working very, very closely with the businesses and are co-developing some of the features to really get into this business relevance. Yeah, so we're doing it differently this time. But still, of course, there are many learnings that I have from Planetly that we're now applying to Nala.
Yeah. Generally, building a company, like, it's super intense. What's kind of the hardest thing about being a founder that nobody talks about?
So I do believe, I mean, I'm investing as well as an angel. So I know both sides now. I know the sides of being a founder, of being an investor, and so on and so forth. I think what's not talked about is that the incentives are not always aligned. We like to think of it as, oh yeah, the investors are coming on board and then all incentives are aligned and everything is happy puppy and that's cool, but they're all in the same boat and so on and so forth. But that's not necessarily true. If you look at, again, the risk profiles here in this term financial risk of an investor, this is substantially different than the risk profile of a founder, where you have all your eggs in one basket. So, and I think this should be addressed way more openly by the founders and maybe as well by the investors. They're all claiming to be super founder friendly, la, la, la. Many of them are, but still, if this company fails, has been many, many personal years of the founders. For the investors, it had been a few board meetings. And it could ruin like all their personal finances completely, to be honest, because they are not diversified at all. And I think this is way less, little to talked about.
Exactly. So the risk, like, it's much bigger for the founder than investor, as you said, because all the eggs are in the one basket. Entrepreneurs often say that their kind of biggest strength is also their biggest weakness. What's yours?
Probably that I have very strong power of will.
And if there's a will, there's a way, right?
Yeah. If I have something in my head, I will get it. That's probably not always only nice as well for my surrounding and my co-founders and my family. But I think it's a superpower.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. And you mentioned also that you know this from kind of both sides now because you're also investing. So as an investor, what's the biggest blind spot you see in climate tech right now?
Oof. So maybe first of all, let's start with the terms again. So there's climate tech. Yeah. We rather talk about Nala now as being nature tech. Why? I mean, nature tech is a subcategory, if you want to put it like this, of climate tech and so on. And nature and climate is so essentially connected with each other. Without nature, we will not solve anything in the climate crisis. And the climate crisis is the biggest driver of nature loss and biodiversity loss. And at the same time, I think there was one point where we all in climate took a wrong path. And this is when climate became so politicized, how do you say that? Politicized, that it's not a good term to use anymore. So at some point we believe we need to tell the whole world and need to educate everyone on what's going on in climate crisis. And ultimately, yes, of course, every end consumer does have an impact on the climate with your consumption, how much you're flying, and la, 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 la. But the big lever lies with the businesses. That's why in all my businesses with Planetly and now with Nala as well, we're focusing on the business world, not on the end consumer. And I mean, the personal carbon footprint has even been an invention of BP. They have invented it to give back the responsibility to the end consumers and not take it themselves. So I believe that climate these days is too politicized, while nature is not. And to be honest, I want to keep it in this corner. actually all parties, no matter which spectrum, are agreeing that nature is precious and that we need to preserve it, and that it's that it has something to do with my home and where I'm coming from and so on and so forth. So let's try to keep it as long as somehow possible in the non-politicized corner.
Sounds good. And Anna, speaking about politics and things being politicized, you sit on powerful boards, you shape, you know, conversations in policy as well. You fund the next wave of innovators, of entrepreneurs. What's one thing that's, you know, kind of keeping you up at night about the future?
There's one very nice sentence, and this is really what's keeping me up at night. And that is, there's only one thing that is stronger than Mother Nature, and that is Father Greed.
I like it.
There is so much greed in the world, so much people who have already billions want to have more power, more craziness. This is what, makes me afraid.
Anna, changing a topic and maybe to having a bit of fun towards the end of this conversation. If we checked your browser history right now, what's the most unexpected thing we'd find?
Oh my gosh. probably you will see that the CPU is really on heavy load because I always have hundreds of browser tabs open, which I want to read. And I seriously believe at some point I will have the time to read it all. But sometimes then the
browser is
breaking down and then for a clear start, and then for whatever reason cannot recover all these tabs. And then and then there's this moment of silence, and then I enjoy it, and then I start over again. So I don't know if this was, I wouldn't like that. Other than that, I think it's pretty, I don't know. I've never looked at my history, and I deleted all of this that I can like return to the website that I usually use.
Sounds good. Anna, 10 years from now, what's the headline you'd love to read about Nala Earth?
That Nala succeeded in bringing nature into the boardroom. This is our vision. That's where this topic belongs. And that's where we want to go.
This is going to be the last one. Can you describe the rest of your life in using just five words?
The rest? How can I know? Okay, the rest of my life.
Or what would you like to see? Like five words. I'm gonna go first, maybe to help you. If I was asked the question, I would just say more of the same, please.
That's nice. So for me, it's probably, I would rather use words, so family, nature, clarity, action, and joy.
I love it. Anna, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. I've been loving this conversation. I wish we could meet in Barcelona in a few weeks when you come, but I'm not going to be a party crusher and break your time with your husband. Thanks so much again. I think people will love this conversation, and I hope to see you sometime in person.
Yeah, looking forward to that.